Okay, last week, I think it's important to put things in chronological order as we see these different things, because we saw last week that Jesus, in verse 1 of chapter 7, that says that now the Jews' feast or tabernacle was at hand. Over in chapter 6, it talked about getting ready for the Passover when he fed the 5,000, and then they found him the next day over at Capernaum. And if you look at chapter 6, he's preaching his heart out as far as even identifying himself as the bread of life, okay, coming down from heaven. If you look at chapter 6, many times he makes the point that him and the Father are one. He's the Father sent him. He's the Son of God. And he tells them in many different times. It's just like audiences today. When you go try to explain something to an audience, sometimes you have to explain it 3, 4, 5 different times, especially, you know, those are worldly things when we go to audiences. But this is important because these people's eternal salvation hinges on if they accept Christ or not. If they don't accept Christ, he knows that. They're not going to have eternal life with him. If they accept him, they'll be with him eternally in heaven. So it is very important. But the Feast of the Tabernacles is 6 months before the Passover. It looks like there's 4 different Passovers that Jesus attends. We saw that back in Nicodemus, right? But that was the first Passover. We saw the second Passover. This next Passover in 6 months is the end. Okay? He knows that. Nobody else, his disciples don't know it. The people he's talking to doesn't know that. But he knows in 6 months he will be on that cross. And he knows his time is limited. And of course it says, you know, his brethren last week, they wanted him to go up and do. And he says he wants to go up privately, okay? And he goes there. That was one of the 3 priests, one of the 3 feasts that the Jewish males was expected to attend. He's going to be there, but he's going up privately. And it says there, in the midst of the Feast of Tabernacles, verse 14, it lasted for 7 days. In the midst of it, the middle of it. You know, it might be the 3rd day, the 4th day, I don't know. But it's in the midst of it. He goes up. And David, read verses 14 down to verse 20 for us.
In chapter 7.
Chapter 7, yeah.
When it was now the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and began to teach. The Jews then were astonished, saying, "How has this man become learned, having never been educated?" So Jesus answered them and said, "My teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. If anyone is willing to do his will, he will know of the teaching, whether it is of God or whether I speak for myself. He who speaks for himself seeks his own glory, but he who is seeking the glory of the one who sent him, he is true, and there is no unrighteousness in him. Did not Moses give you the law, and yet none of you carries out the law? Why do you seek to kill me?" The crowd answered, "You have a demon. Who seeks to kill you?"
Okay. We see here that his teaching in verse 16, first of all, verse 15, what effect did it have on he comes in the midst of the Feast of Tabernacles. Some people think he's in the courtyard of the Gentiles. And normally the teachers, the rabbis would sit when they teached. So he's there teaching in the courtyard, we think of the Gentiles. What effect did it have on the people listening to him?
They know, evidently they know his background. I mean, how can this man speak like this? Because he didn't go to college. I mean, we would say.
He didn't go to the rabbinical schools, did he? Right. He didn't go to seminary, did he? You know, back at this time, the Jewish fathers, most part, was responsible for teaching their sons. Okay? And sometimes they would teach their sons the occupation that they had. And we saw that with Joseph and Jesus. They taught him to be a carpenter. Okay, and then some of the Jews, the rabbis, the ones would go to a rabbi. Did Paul sit at a feet of someone?
Yes, that taught him?
You know, Paul was a really privileged privileged person when we think about it. He was able to go sit at a great teacher and expound the law. And Paul had an interest in the law. The Pharisees had an interest in the law. Paul personally searched the scriptures diligently to rise at the position they did. But he did everything in good conscience. But he was wrong. And we see that when on the road to Damascus, when he sees Jesus and tells him to go see Ananias, told him what to do to be saved. And he listened. Paul had that knowledge. And he said, hey, it clicks now. I'm going to follow Jesus. They knew. We saw that last week in chapter 6. Those at Capernaum said, don't we know his father? Don't we know his mother? Don't we know his brothers and sisters? He's from Nazareth. How can the Son of God, how can the Messiah come from Nazareth, right? Just because the place he came from, they didn't think a Messiah could come from that city of Nazareth. Look at verse 16. He answers them, whose doctrine is he that he's teaching? Is this his doctrine that he's made up? Same thing he did 6 months ago. This is 6 months after last chapter. He's saying the same thing. Every word Jesus taught, he made it a point to say, this is not my own will. This is the will of my Father. If any man will do his will, listen, not God, Jesus' will, but his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. Could they go back in the old law and look at the prophecies about the Messiah that would come? He that speaketh of himself in verse 18 seeketh his own glory. Back a few weeks ago, I had heard, I don't know if the number is right, but it's a substantial number, that there was over 160 false messiahs or false Christs that came. And guess what? A number of people believed him. Believed that man when he comes and says, I'm the Christ. And they wanted to overthrow the Roman government. And guess what happened to all of them? They're gone. It was a lie. They were speaking of themselves. Jesus is speaking of him as being from the Father. His witness is true. Now, listen, interesting. Here in verse 19, what does he ask them?
Said Moses gave you the law, but none of you all followed the law.
Was the law important?
Yes.
The Gentiles was under their law, but God specifically gave the law, the Ten Commandments, and those other laws to the Israelites. Did they keep it?
No.
Let me ask you. Do we keep if all we had was the Ten Commandments? Do we keep them? Has anybody in here in their life kept the Ten Commandments? No. Should it not tell us then if we can't keep that law? Is the law bad? Is the law imperfect? Or are we imperfect?
Us.
We're imperfect, okay? We said that, what, Wednesday night? And we don't take questions, but do we sin in a day? Think about that. Do we ever sin in a day? And if we have one sin in a day, that's 364 days of the year. And then we think how old we are. You know, one sin can condemn one. Now, we should know that we need something for our sins to be forgiven. And that's why Jesus came here. Did not Moses give you a law? None of you keep it. Why do you go about to kill me? 6 more months of the last Passover, when Jesus, a Passover and a half ago, he's the one that healed the man that was lame for 38 years. Didn't they at that time say, we need to get rid of him? Remember the guy, Jesus, and Jesus' instruction, pick up your pallet, and he goes to the temple to worship, and they see him picking up his pallet and saying, you're working on this. They had to know the man had been lame for 38 years at the pool. They never asked him, They didn't rejoice with him getting his legs back. They were saying, you know, you're carrying. And that carrying your pallet on the Sabbath was not a violation of the Sabbath. And what Justin preached on today, if you go back to the Luke, a chapter before that was the transfiguration. Most people think the transfiguration happened from Jesus' third Passover before the fourth Passover, but before the Feast of Tabernacles, okay? So somewhere 6 months before this event here was the transfiguration. And in that period, did they not accuse Jesus of being a devil? Isn't it interesting in today, even in today's time, how people will get on the same thing, the same talking points? People today, back then, it's the same way as they've accused him of a devil. He goes to Jerusalem. They're accusing him of being a devil. Thou hast a devil. Who goeth about to kill you? Did all the people in Jerusalem there that day when they was around him in the court of the Gentiles, did they know what the heart of the Pharisees was trying to do? As he's teaching there, there's people, remember, there's males and people coming from all around, coming to the Feast of Tabernacles. The people from the countryside might not know what the Pharisees wanted to do with Jesus. I heard this, and when I was reading again about the Feast of Tabernacles week, I heard there were 6,000 Pharisees. That's really not a whole lot of people to be a group when you think of the population of the Jews at this time. But they have already decided they was going to get rid of Jesus for the things he does. And it's interesting. Look down, starting with verse 22. Let's go down to verse 31. Austin, you want to read that for us?
Yeah, one more time, David.
Excuse me?
Which verses?
22 down to 31.
Moses therefore gave you circumcision, not that it is from Moses, but from the fathers. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses should not be broken, are you angry with me because I made a man completely well on the Sabbath? Do you not judge according to the appearance, but judge with righteous judgment? Now some of them from Jerusalem said, is this not he whom they seek to kill? But look, he speaks boldly, and they say nothing to him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is truly the Christ? However, we know where this man is from. When the Christ comes, no one knows where he is from. Then Jesus cried out as he taught the temple, saying, you both know me, and you know where I am from. And I have not come of myself, but he who sent me is true, whom you do not know. But I know him, for I am from him, and he sent me. Therefore they sought to take him, but no one laid a hand on him, because his hour had not yet come. And many of the people believed in him and said, when the Christ comes, he do more signs than these which this man has done?
In verse 21, which I failed to tell him to read, it says, Jesus answered and said unto them, I have done one work, and ye all are marveled. And I believe that one work was when he healed that man for 38 years, because it did marvel them. It did what caused the Pharisees to decide to put Jesus to death. Done one work. It was a great work. And remember today, when Justin said, we want to see another miracle. Is that not what they said in chapter 6 also we discussed? After he fed 5,000 men with only, what, 5 really small loaves and 2 really small fishes? And they said, we want to see another work. And then today, over in Luke, they want to see another work. And it comes back to verse 22. They want to always bring up Moses. They did this last week in chapter 6 when he was at Capernaum. They always want to bring up Moses. They always want to bring up the law. And Jesus goes right into this on the Sabbath. That's why that verse before said, for one good work, you all marvel. Under the old law, the Sabbath day was a day of rest, was it not? It means you could not do things, works. You couldn't go and sell, right? But could you do other things that needed to be done on the Sabbath?
Emergencies, life-saving.
Life-saving. If one of your animals fell in a ditch, was it not an act of mercy to get that animal out? Was it an act of mercy if a man falls on the Sabbath and breaks an arm or breaks a leg? Was it not an act of mercy to set that leg for a doctor to take care of that? If the wind comes up, you should secure your different things. Those were things that come up. Now, under the law of Moses, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. But also under the law of Moses, what was to happen to a male child on the eighth day?
Circumcised.
You know, it's interesting. Did God say, okay, children will not be born on the Sabbath? When it comes time for a child to be born, can you keep it from being born? Maybe there's some things you can do, you know, if it's before the time of delivery and those types of things. But when it's the time of delivery, when the time is fulfilled, is there anything you can do to keep that child from being born? Okay, so now on the eighth day, if it was a male child, on the eighth day under the law of Moses, what was you to do?
Circumcise
the male. Circumcise. Would they do that on the eighth day? Is that a work? Yeah, it's a work. And it says, if a man on verse 20, if a man on the Sabbath day receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken. By circumcising the child on the eighth day, was you breaking the law of Moses?
No.
And you're angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? How would you like to have been the guy, the Pharisees, how would you like to have been that guy that had been lame for 38 years, sitting at the pool, just waiting on someone to come and put you in the pool when the waters were stirred? Man, how unmerciful.
According to their philosophy, somebody could put him in a pool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's possible.
But it couldn't be on the Sabbath day, could it?
No.
You put him in the pool, but you couldn't do it. You couldn't put him on the Sabbath day in the pool, could you?
According to what they were trying to push right there.
That's right. That's right. Unmerciful people. And you're angry because I did this? Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Yeah, Dan?
This is the important fact here. This is what so many of them struggle with at this time, is the fact, you know, he's saying to judge not according to the appearance. They knew the law. They knew the prophecies. They were trying to not let him fit into those spots because he didn't look how they thought he should. He wasn't fitting the bill that they thought it was supposed to be, just like today. People, you can show and teach people the word, and then when it comes in, well, but I think, it doesn't matter what you think, it doesn't matter the thoughts you have in your mind. And that's the same here, is, you know, a lot of times people want to make worship services a convenience for them. You know, as I said, refreshments, this, that, and the other. You know, when it's taken away from the worship of God, God has laid it out for us, what we're to do. So we do that. And just that, you know, but again, just at that time there, they struggled with, he didn't fit what they thought he should be.
God gave them a law under the Old Testament that they was going to be judged by. And God gives us a law today that we'll be judged by. And we need to take our life and pattern it under the dispensation that we are, that we're in. And then the gospel in verse 23, after he makes his point in verse 23, remember now, these are not just only Jewish or Israelites in Jerusalem, but there's men from all around that's come for this feast. And what do they say? What's the question on them?
Is this the one they seek to kill?
Yeah. He's made a man whole. The other thing, go back to Nicodemus back in the very beginning. What did he attest to Jesus that he had done? All the works. You have to be from God because of all the miracles that you're doing. Nicodemus even realizes that. But they say, you know, is he the one that he's going to kill? But he speaketh boldly. and they say nothing unto him. He's in here going on pretty good, isn't he? Making sure that everybody understands that God is his Father. He's the Son of God. He's come to save the world. And they say, do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? The people he's talking to, do they not know this is the Christ? Where's the rulers at? They're not. We're going to find out at the end of this chapter. They're not there. They're somewhere else. How about we know this man whence he is? For when Christ cometh, no man whence he is. Now they're saying, well, this can't be the Christ because no man knows when the Christ will come. Now that's interesting in this logic here. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. But when Christ, when the Messiah is going to come, you think God's going to reveal the Messiah to his people? Over in Isaiah, look at all these prophecies in the Old Testament. The Messiah is not going to come, and nobody knows the Messiah's come, right? Also, who attests to the Messiah? Remember when John was baptizing one day, and Jesus comes to be baptized? Two events happened that day that testified about Jesus. Who were they?
John identified him, and then God verified that this is my son.
Did John the Baptist, even though they was cousins, did John the Baptist know that Jesus was the Messiah?
He knew when he came to be baptized.
Right, but before that?
I don't know.
I think he knew, right? But they was, remember how the disciples of John, the reason Andrew was there and Philip was there and I think John the Apostle, they was with John because they was looking for the Christ. And when John the Baptist says, this is the man you're looking for, they go abide with Jesus. And it's interesting in verse 28, the word Jesus cried. Did he cry? Does that mean he cried tears? He raised his voice. Yeah. They didn't have sound systems and amplifiers and those things. Can you see Jesus if you're there? You know, a lot of times I'd like to be different places in history just to see, just to be there and see what goes on at these great events. It says, he says he's cried. He spoke up. He shouted. Ye both know me and you know whence I am. I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. He wanted to make sure that nobody misunderstood what he was saying. And he cried out. And he says, you know me. Look what I've been doing. I've been teaching the same thing for 3 years. It's getting close to the end of his ministry. My teaching is true. 29, but I know him, and I am from him, and he hath sent me. Who's that?
God.
Did the Israelites put, even at this time, did they put great faith in God? Did they not, everything they did in their private life, in their public life, did they not believe in God?
Yes.
Yes. That's what's strange. You know, it's how come it's so hard for them to accept Christ when the Gentile world is out there. Has Jesus hasn't even went to the Gentile world. We got through Samaria, but they was half Jews. And Paul goes to the Gentile world, and they accept Christ pretty easily, don't they? And we're Gentiles too, aren't we? Okay? But here, they should have been searching for God. They searched the Scriptures to know the old law. Then in verse 30, they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him because his hour was not yet come. What did some of the group try to do? They tried to take him, right? Now, over there when he fed them, which was 6 months ago, the crowd tried to take him and do what with him?
Make him king.
Make him a king, right? Was that his goal, to be a physical king? No, and I think his disciples got kind of taken up with that too, because he sent them on in a boat, didn't he? And it said, we told him, Mark, it says, their hearts were hardened. Why would their hearts be hardened when he sent them in a boat? But, you know, maybe they got caught up in everything too with wanting to take Jesus. But no man laid hands on him because, what does it mean his hour was not yet come?
What happened at a certain time, and that wasn't the time of...
God had set a date. All this is working with God's providence here. And he'll say this again as we go forward in John. He said it back at the wedding feast. My hour has not yet come. Jesus came here for one reason only. Today in the world today, people think Jesus was a good man. He was a philosopher. He told us the golden rule, how we should treat other people. Is that not good?
Yes.
Did Jesus take kids and put them on his knee and was good with the kids? You know, look how good he is with the kids. He loves the kids, the little children. He tells them, you know, the apostles one time said, get the kids away from him. But Jesus said, I want the kids, okay? And people think he's a good philosopher. He thinks he's a good man. He wouldn't hurt anybody. He would, if you ask for him to do something for you, he would. But I've said it Wednesday night, and I've said it many times. Jesus was either a madman thinking he was Christ. He was a bad man before. Either he's a bad man because he said something that he could not fulfill. If he was not the Son of God, he was a bad man. Or he was the God man. He was the truly one from God. We need to remember, because the world today, there's many people worshiping today, right now, that they're not worshiping in the way they should be worshiped. And they're going to be held accountable on the day of judgment. In verse 31, and many people believed on him, and they said, when Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? Remember that crowd we talked about 6 months ago? They wanted him to do another miracle. Justin today in the sermon over in Luke, they wanted him to see another miracle. They want to see another. In fact, when he's on the cross, what does somebody say to him? If you be the Son of God, bring yourself down. But would that satisfy them?
No.
They had hard hearts.
Being resurrected from the dead didn't satisfy a lot of people. I mean, even today.
It's interesting reading on the Feast of Tabernacles. You get on the internet, and then the articles start talking, who was Jesus? And you start reading those articles, and there's all kind of people, opinions. That's totally wrong. But all you got to do is go to the book here and you find out who Jesus was. Okay, Bill, you want to read verses 32 through 39. 32 through 39, please.
The Pharisees heard the crowd murmuring these things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then Jesus said to them, I shall be with you a little while longer, and then I go to him who sent me. You will seek me and will not find me, and where I am, you cannot come. Then the Jews said among themselves, where does he intend to go if we shall not find him? Does he intend to go to the dispersion among the Greeks and teach the Greeks? What is this thing that he said, you will seek me and not find me, and where I am, you cannot come home? You cannot come. On that last day, great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. But this he spoke concerning the Spirit, whom those believing in him would receive. For the Holy Spirit was not yet given, because Jesus was not yet glorified.
In this crowd, there's probably people coming and going. We're going to see the next part of the chapter, the rest of the chapter, the Pharisees are together at a different room, okay? They've got a problem, okay? Because Jesus is not fitting their plan. Because if Jesus is true, what he's talking about, and the law of Moses goes away, what happens to them? Their power goes away. Does people want power? Does people strive for power? Okay, it goes away, right? 6,000 of them. It's not a big number, but they have power. Okay, they hear the first 32. What do they hear the people doing? Yeah, murmuring. Okay, concerning him. And they sent. What do? They've got officers, right? Do you think they've sent for people before and arrested people?
Yes.
Yeah. This is not the first time. This is not the first time they've done that. They've done this before. And then Jesus says, yet a little while I am with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. Listen to verse 34. Ye shall seek me and shall not find me, and where I am, thither ye cannot come. What's going to happen to this throng of people there if they don't accept Christ? If they don't accept Christ, will they be able to find Christ? Those Jews today, and there's a lot of Orthodox Jews and a lot of Jews that are very religious about how they observe things, will they be able to find Christ? No. If they're looking on the wrong things, they won't be able to find Christ. Then if they can't find Christ, will they be with Christ in the end? No. These are his countrymen. Okay? Don't we have, you know, we have the America, and then we have different states, and then we have local communities and states. And don't we sometimes have allegiances for people we grew up with? I grew up in Oklahoma. Okay, I think Oklahoma's a great place, you know. We used to, football games, we didn't like the people from Fairdale, did we? Or the people in Fern Creek, you know, our coaches told us all kind of crazy stuff, you know. Afterwards, you would say, you know, they didn't say those things, you know. But these are his own people, God's people, that he's coming. You shall seek me, but you won't find me. And then they, well, in verse 35, what did they say? Who did they say he's going to go to?
Greeks.
Yeah. You know, there was those Israelites that had went up and lived with the Gentiles for work or for whatever reason. I don't know. And then there's Gentiles. Is he going to teach the Gentiles? What matter saying, you shall seek me and none shall find me? And who are there? Is Jesus talking on spiritual issues and they're thinking physical things?
Yes.
That's the whole problem. They're thinking physically. And then verse 37, the last day of the feast. That he cries again, it says. He stood and cried, if any man thirst, let him come unto me. This feast is 7 days. This is the last day. I'm also told on the Feast of Tabernacles, that's when they would live in booths and different things. I'm also told that on the 7 days, on the first day, what did the people do around the temple? And on the seventh day, they did something 7 times around the temple. What's that an example of?
Jericho.
The Feast of Tabernacles was to remember what God had done for his people when he led them out of Egypt, right? Passover was out of Egypt that night. The Feast of Tabernacles for them to march. Also, I am told, and this is, I heard it, and then I also confirmed it last night on an article. I don't know if it was the high priest or somebody would take a golden pitcher, go to the Pool of Siloam, walk through the water gate, come to the altar. And some people said they poured it on the altar. Some people, they said they poured it beside the altar. They would pour this water out. As a remembrance, what did Moses give them in the wilderness one time?
Water.
He was supposed to speak to it, and he hit it, right? And he said, must we bring? No, it wasn't him. It wasn't him and God. It was God bringing the water. But that, here again, when you see the feast of the Israelites, it's to remind them of what God has done for them in the past. Okay, so if that's true, and I think that could be true, what does Jesus say? He that believeth on me, as the scriptures have said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. Here's this priest or whoever it was took this pitcher, dropped it out, and there's the example of what he's saying. I've got living water. Remember last week, they said, well, Moses gave us manna from heaven. And what did Jesus say to the people that ate that manna from heaven? They're all dead. But the bread I give you, you'll live eternally. And then verse 39, as we said, but this spake he of the Spirit which he had believed on him to receive, for the Holy Ghost was not yet given, because that Jesus was not yet glorified. Also, I'm told, too, we just got a few minutes, at the Feast of Tabernacles, if you go back and read Psalms 113 to 118, those are the psalms that they will sing when they would come to the feast. Not only then, but those psalms are songs or psalms or songs that they would sing when they'd come together for the Feast of Tabernacles. It is interesting. As you know, I've talked to you about my friend Joseph, who's an Orthodox Jew, lives in Canada, and he will not turn a light socket on during the day, during the Sabbath. But we was at a piece of property he was looking at, and another agent was there, that the agent representing the seller, and he gets in the car with him, and he finds out Joseph is. We start talking a little bit religion. Joseph, he has a little thing on his head and everything. And the person said to him, said, because Joseph said, I'm taking David to Israel with me sometime. I'm in the back seat. And the guy in the front says, well, you know what, my mother would like to go too. But Joseph, she would try to convert you if she goes. Joseph goes, I'm not into conversion. So my goal is, I'm thinking, is how do I get him to be converted, you know? And we'll talk about religious things, but the other day he told me, they study the Torah. When he goes to the Sabbath, they started the first five books of the Bible. And he looked at me and said, David, we don't study Judges and Joshua in those books like you do. Because I've told them, because I've asked them all kind of questions about the Old Testament. But they will not find Jesus because they're not seeking for Jesus.